I've just left my house on High Brighton Street, walking down the road towards the sea.
Meet Torkel Larsen, a retained firefighter and a man with a dream.
Fishermen busy pressure washing their boats, a bit noisy.
He wants to build a new pier at Withensea near Hull to replace the one destroyed more than 100 years ago after ships repeatedly crashed into it during winter storms. The boat responsible for the final devastating blow was owned by a Yorkshireman who had emigrated to Norway. In what seems to me a perfect example of historical symmetry, it is Torkel, a Norwegian now living in Yorkshire, who is leading the project to put the pier back.
I'm just going up the ramp to Pier Towers now, the only bit remaining of the original pier.
Those sand-coloured towers, with their battlemented tops, are said to have been modelled on Conwy Castle. But for a long time, they've stood on the prom, redundant.
Of course, now there's just the towers left, and we're hoping to change that and rebuild the pier. Give the towers back their original purpose of being a grand gateway onto the walkway out over the sea.
As a seaside historian, I've always loved stepping out over the waves, peering through the gaps in between the planks on a pier, feeling safe and simultaneously vulnerable because I'm out on a limb walking above the water. I've studied Victorian pier builders, the entrepreneurs and engineers who struck out from the coast with absolute confidence. By the 1870s, a pier was the latest must-have resort accessory. But we've still got 60 of the original 100 left. Blackpool alone has three. So what is the motivation for adding another in 2021? Torkel Larsen told me it all began for him in 2016, when he and his wife moved house.
It started a bit by chance, really. We bought an old house that had belonged to one of these hoarders. So when we bought the house, it was absolutely full of boxes and plastic bags and all sorts of rubbish. So sifting through all this stuff, we came across this box of old documents. And in these documents were the old architect's drawings of the original Withensea Pier back from the 1870s. I'm just fascinated by Victorian engineering and how precise it is and how beautiful. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be fantastic if we could get something like that back to Withensea?
Not everyone likes the noisy amusement arcades and brash kiss me quick type fun often associated with traditional seaside piers. Though that's just one phase in their development. Piers started out as landing stages before becoming walkways for holidaymakers, then entertainment centres with huge theatres and end-of-the-pier shows. And times change, things have moved on. Generations of Withensea people have felt the loss of their Victorian pier, the final battered remains of which were demolished in 1903. It's still an emotive subject.
You know, it's not just a pier, is it? You know, a pier is a bit of metal and some wood. What it is, it's a potential for an outdoor community hub. It's a potential for people to be able to show off a little bit. You know, look what we've got.
Roger Reed has lived in Withensea all his life. Today, he's chairman of Withensea Big Local, a resident-led programme which is one of 150 throughout England, supported by the Big Lottery Fund. Allocated £1 million to spend locally, it seeks to achieve lasting change for the Withensea community. He told me just why his town needs its pier back.
It is a deprived area. It suffers a double whammy of being both a coastal community and an isolated rural community. We've got a largely seasonal economy. It does mean that we don't attract any big-name shops, for example. And it's been a long-standing thing in the town. Wouldn't it be nice if we got the pier back? It would give Withensea a heart again. And suddenly this chap comes along and he says, I'd like to do that, please.
Even though I visited most coastal resorts to research my books, I've yet to make it to Withensea, and lockdown has made it impossible to get there so far this year. Like so many other things, I've had to do my travel virtually, using satellite imagery to find Withensea on the Yorkshire coast, south of Scarborough, and about 17 miles east of Hull. The town has a lighthouse and a long sandy beach. On the edges are the regular grids of caravan parks, and then it's just fields. With a single road in and out, you've got to have a reason to go there. When writer Adam Farrer moved to Withensea from rural Suffolk as a teenager, he thought it was a glorious place, full of endless possibilities. Unaware of the decline already beginning to blight the town.
I was 16. It was exciting and vibrant to me. There's the smell of fresh donuts and fish and chips, and the high street was alive with the lurid colours of plastic buckets and spades, and there was entertainment every night in different venues, and there's the clatter of the arcades. It was just exciting to my senses. And I didn't realise that the town was actually suffering at that point and had been since the 1960s.
To help turn the town's fortunes around, Torkel Larsen and his team set up the Withensea Pier and Promenade Association to make their dream a reality. In practical terms, this has meant contending with myriad fundraising applications, the potential for community opposition and layers of bureaucracy, as well as factoring in everything the marine environment can possibly throw at them. I'm keen to find out how this new pier will differ from its Victorian predecessor.
It's a very forward-thinking project. The idea that you would have a 500-foot pier with a hydroelectric-powered restaurant at the end of it. The feeling amongst the locals is that people will come to see this new, intriguing pier, and there will be a financial trickle-down effect that will benefit the businesses. It will rejuvenate the high street. So if anything is going to turn the town around, it would be the pier.
And the first step towards making this happen was to sound out the local community. Torkel Larsen again.
To start off with, we realised that, first of all, we needed support from the local residents and the local businesses. Without their support, you know, we wouldn't even get off the ground. So we went round every single shop and business in Withensea and told them about our plans and asked them to support us. I think everybody, right from the start, first of all, they realised that it might not be easy to achieve and were probably a little bit mad trying it. But at the same time, people saying, well, if you can pull this off, it'll be absolutely fantastic for the town and it'll benefit the whole community.
It's going to put us back on the map, isn't it? Where we are now, and it's been a tough year for us all, hasn't it? So we all need that feel-good factor, and that's going to be the start of it.
How big and ostentatious it's going to be is another thing, you know, to attract the kind of visitor numbers. There's a lot of young people in the town that have very little to do, so you do think, is the pier the way to go? Could the money have been used for other projects and to also create new things for some of the young people in the town?
Most seaside towns have piers now, and Withersea doesn't, so I think it needs a bit of touch-up, really, and get going.
And get going they did. A feasibility study showed that it was a viable project, but the astronomical cost of building the complete pier came as a shock.
Building the whole Withensea Pier would cost about £8 million. And we're like, wow, £8 million, that's a lot of money. There's no way we're going to raise that locally. And then we realised that we didn't have to build the whole pier. We just had to get started. So that's when we came up with the idea of building a pier stage by stage. And we thought, well, can we just build the first section of the pier? And that would cost it out at about £250,000. And all of a sudden it went from something that we thought, there's no way we can do this, to a project that we could really get behind and say, this is doable. This is something we can achieve in a reasonable amount of time. So let's go for the first stage. And we call that the Withensea Viewing Platform.
Phasing the pier's construction means they can add to it gradually, as funding allows. Even so, for a deprived town of some 6,000 people, it was a daunting prospect to try and raise £250,000 among themselves.
We realised we had to go to bigger funders, national funders, and apply for funding. So we sent off quite a lot of applications to things like the National Lottery, the Coastal Communities Fund, Rural Development Fund, and said, here's our project, this is how it's going to benefit our community and the surrounding areas, and will you give us funding towards this project?
Some local residents like Linda worry that even if they do get the money for this first stage viewing platform, there's no guarantee it will be a big enough draw on its own to get much-needed visitors back into the town.
I think the thing is, I mean, the platform is the first stage, but if they do get to the end of the whole process and it's 8 million, I've been told, you know, you do think, well, that's an awful lot of money to invest in one particular project. Because I think on the one hand that, yes, you could argue it would fetch more visitors to the town, but to fetch more visitors, you would be looking at something like Margate Pier or Brighton Pier or something like that with all sorts of things on it. Then, and it brought thousands of visitors and boosted the economy. You'd say, well, it's been value for money. And obviously you do wonder then, how long will it take to then get the rest of the stages developed and in position for it to then become a feasible full project? But I think just recently there's been some photographs on Facebook where people have posted from the 80s and 90s where the actual waves are coming over the pier towers. That still goes on. You still get these big tides. So you do wonder, how is it going to actually survive the strength of the storms and the surges of the water?
Those surges and high tides from the North Sea have always been a huge problem for Withensea. It's slap bang in the middle of the Holderness coastline, which stretches 61 kilometres from Flamborough in the north to Spurn Point in the south, and is one of the fastest eroding coastlines in Europe, disappearing at the rate of 5 feet a year due to climate change and increased storminess with bigger, longer-lasting waves. The original Withensea Pier lasted a mere 15 years before terrible storms smashed boat after boat into its iron structure. Professor Dan Parsons from the Energy and Environment Institute at the University of Hull says the new pier has the potential to help monitor sea level rises.
One of the key things that we have as scientists is a responsibility to communicate to the general public the sorts of things that we're doing and why we're doing them. And the pier offers a focal point for communicating some of that science. So we have a project with East Riding Yorkshire Council installing photo stations. We're going to use those to track how the cliffs, both north and south of Withensea, are going to change over time. The proposal is that we'll put two of those, one looking north, one looking south, on the actual pier, which will be fantastic because it'll get the public involved in collecting data and understanding how dynamic and how incredible the Holderness coast really is.
And local historian Phil Matheson believes that putting an innovative coastal change observatory in the pier towers at the entrance to the proposed new pier will also help by acting as an educational tool for the hundreds of students who already visit Withensea to witness coastal erosion in action.
Ultimately, what we would like it to be is an educational hub. One of the things that Torkel and I have noticed over the years is that we get a lot of students arriving by bus from all over the place, Nottingham, Bradford, Sheffield, and they've come to study coastal erosion. And the thing is, if we can tap into the educational market, we can act as a hub for Hull University, for secondary education, and sort of embed ourselves in the current syllabus. And it's the place to see this rapid change as before your very eyes, actually. I mean, last year we walked the beach, Torkel and I, and literally there was two falls while we were walking between Withensea and Sandlymere as we walked along in that hour.
This rate of change has already been brought home, quite literally, to residents like Adam Farrer, whose family lived in the northern part of the town. They could only watch as the waves approached ever closer to their door.
My parents owned a house in the north end of Withensea, and when we moved there in 1992, we were told it would take 100 years for the sea to be any kind of problem for our house, and 30 years later, it's practically lapping at the front door. The current sea defences that are being put on the beach to stop the catastrophic erosion, that's been funded by the EU, so there's no EU money coming in. There needs to be some other form of funding, and hopefully that will come via the pier.
We've just been down on the beach, and we're going to go now inside, have a look inside the North Tower, see what's going on in there.
Visitors to the new pier will walk through the middle of the two pier towers, north and south, that have stood on the prom looking out to sea since the 1870s. Last year, Torkel and his team took a 99-year lease on the towers from East Riding Council, which means that when COVID restrictions ease, they can use them as a focus for fundraising activities.
Looking around, you come to our souvenir stalls. Got all sorts of souvenirs.
There's a long way to go before the pier is completed to its final length, with its renewable energy centre and hydroelectric-powered restaurant. But, says architect Louise Longstaff, This reinvention of what a pier can be is exactly what is needed to make it relevant for the 21st century.
The idea is that it will become a showcase for other environmental technologies. So at the moment we're looking at the idea of incorporating small wind turbines, solar panels to the roof, a small hydroelectric generator and a wave tidal generation system. But there's obviously challenges around building the pier that the Victorians would have faced as well in terms of incoming tides and the harsh coastal environment as well. So we're very much working to nature, really.
I'm obviously not alone in finding resorts with a pier particularly attractive. A pier turns a town by the sea into a proper seaside resort. When the first Withernsea Pier opened to great fanfare in 1878, it brought thousands of tourists on the newly built railway line from Hull. The loss of both railway and pier have contributed to Withernsea's economic decline. And even though the plans for the new pier are different and innovative, Gavin Henderson, president of the National Pier Society, believes it won't be long before they'll have to add some traditional amusements alongside some upmarket restaurants and food stalls to keep people coming.
The way society is moving now, a lot of entertainment is happening around eating and drinking. And rather like the piers had to provide entertainment to attract people on them, it won't be long, I think, before they'll be having to put in comedy acts and music and so forth to spice up what they're doing. One of the thoughts is, what is the future for entertainment on piers? I've been in Los Angeles not long ago, and there are a number of piers there, Santa Monica and Malibu, and it's all about really quite high-class catering and comedy and music, so one can see performance work kind of returning to piers in that way. But actually the health craze and the fact that people are taking that seriously, I think there's an opportunity for, you know, recreating bathing stations and fitness centres and so forth as part of the whole way in which a pier goes forward.
The idea of a bathing station for sea swimming taps into recent research which shows taking a dip in cold water can help protect the brain from degenerative diseases. But it turns out you don't have to be in the water for it to do you good. A new European initiative, the Blue Health Project, has been examining the impact on our health and well-being of interacting with blue spaces, swimming pools, lakes, and the sea. Environmental psychologist Lewis Elliott from the University of Exeter.
The idea that they are popular places isn't a new idea, of course. And our research estimated that in England, at least, 271 million visits are made to coastal environments every year. So that result by itself, it may not be surprising, but it becomes important when you look at how that compares with other environments and across demographic subpopulations. So for example, if you compare visits to coasts with visits to woodlands, for example, or forests, coastal walks are more likely to be made by people who are female, older adults, and people of lower socioeconomic status. And those are all groups who tend to suffer a disproportionate burden of poor health compared to their male, younger, or more affluent counterparts. So therefore, the high number of visits made to the coast by those populations could be influencing reductions in inequalities, certainly in access to these environments, but potentially health inequalities too.
And that's fascinating from the point of view of this programme, because we're talking about a pier, and of course a pier is an extension of the promenade over the waves. In blue health terms, can we say that taking a walk on a pier above the waves increases people's well-being then?
I mean, there's all kinds of environmental factors that might shape whether an experience like that is beneficial or not. So, you know, the weather, what facilities there are at the pier, or, you know, even whether a seagull steals an ice cream out of your hand, for example. So, yeah, I would say that walking on a pier is good for people's well-being. I don't know how different it is to walking by any other kind of water's edge. I'm not sure we have the granularity of data making those distinctions yet. But certainly, you know, we've got evidence to show that walking in particular beside the sea has beneficial impacts on our mental health. Yeah.
Of course, piers have all been closed during the pandemic, losing much needed income for the businesses they support and placing further strain on the huge maintenance budgets needed to keep them going. Dr. Anya Chapman is a senior lecturer in tourism management at Bournemouth University, who specialises in the tourism of mature coastal resorts like Withernsea.
Her research proves how important piers are as a magnet for drawing people down to the seafront. But she told me that our ageing pier stock face a unique combination of issues.
They are facing a lot of challenges, but you have to appreciate that many of them are approaching 200 years old. So there is increased maintenance cost. There is damage caused by storms, damage caused by fires, and also the increasing challenge of climate change and rising sea levels and storm surges. And ultimately, what piers are looking to do is to make sure that their income will cover those increasing maintenance costs and generate that profit.
Is it unusual to see a community wanting to resurrect its lost pier, like in Withensea, or do you think this is part of a wider phenomenon?
Very much Withensea is part of a wider trend. So we can look at pier trusts that are community owned, such as Swanage, which has been owned by the community trust for 30 years. And there's lots of other piers around the country that are all being championed by their communities and regenerated by their communities, because I think the communities recognise the importance of having a pier. It marks them as a resort. And this is something that has gone back to when piers were first built and first developed. A pier put the resort on the map, and it's still the case today.
Even with all the determination of a community willing this pier into existence, they can't do it without money, and lots of it. After three rejections from big funders, they eventually got a letter from the Rural Development Programme for England telling them they had got through the first stage and giving them a list of six things they needed to complete to qualify for funding.
So the first thing was that we needed to have at least 20% match funding. The second item was, because we're constructing out...
Six tasks doesn't sound like much when you've got a year. But everyone involved was a volunteer, doing things they'd never done before. One of the most complex and lengthy turned out to be getting planning permission from East Riding of Yorkshire Council.
I can honestly say I don't think they've ever had an application to build a pier before. So there was an awful lot of things to consider, things we hadn't even thought about, like how is it going to affect the crab and lobster population? Also, because we're on a rapidly eroding coast, we had to look at things, how the sand moves and how that's going to get affected, look at flood risk. And then it's the design itself, obviously. It's all got to be made strong enough to withstand, you know, the North Sea winter storms. It's got to be made to a certain specification with the steel and the paint, etc., so that it can all withstand the environment. And all that has to go into planning. And it's a long process to and fro before everybody's happy that it's all being done correctly.
And with the deadline looming, how close did it actually get to the wire?
It got incredibly close. I think we had something like 2 or 3 days before the deadline. It was an absolute great relief. I pressed the send button on the online application. I thought, it's all done now, and wait for the reply.
After a much-needed holiday, doing a 1,200-mile sponsored cycle ride back to his native Norway with his family, Torkel arrived home to the letter he'd been waiting for.
And this is what it said. It said, "Dear Mr. Larson, your full application was unsuccessful." I was completely shocked. Having worked so hard to fulfil everything that asked us to do, you know, I looked at it, I thought, I don't believe this. So, yeah, that was quite devastating news. You know, people were very upset. We'd worked so hard for this. Some people were angry, some people were crying. The biggest feeling was we were just all bitterly disappointed.
How do you actually get that momentum back?
One of the things we looked at was, you know, how much work we've done. And this work was not going to be for nothing. And it's work we'd have to do anyway. You know, you can't build a pier without having the marine licence. You can't build a pier without having planning permission. So now all that was in place, we thought, well, we've done everything else. There are other funders out there. Let's get back on with it, see what other funders we can find, put in new funding applications and carry on.
With the promise of finance from other funders and the total raised from local events creeping up, things were moving in the right direction. Then in spring 2020, the pandemic hit. Potential sources of money disappeared overnight. they were back to square one with a shortfall of £180,000, a huge amount of money to find. And we're now coming towards the end of our third lockdown. So how has progress been since that time?
What we had as a very pleasant surprise was the chair of Widnesea Big Local contacted me and he says, you know what, we've decided to increase our funding to cover your shortfall. So January this year, we could finally announce that the project is now fully funded. And that's just fantastic news.
Construction was due to begin at the end of March this year. Then a few days before we recorded this programme, Torkel Larsen got in touch to say, even though all the plans and requirements needed for the build had been approved and met last year, East Riding Council were now asking for changes.
And they'd come up with another 67 questions and alterations they wanted us to make to the drawings. I think a bigger problem is that we have put all the ordering of material on hold and our contractors and subcontractors can't now get started. Due to this delay, along with changes to the design and the increasing cost of materials, we're now estimating it's going to cost something like another £60,000 to get the first stage of the construction done. And this is money we just don't have.
East Riding of Yorkshire sent us a statement that said, "The council will continue to offer advice, guidance and practical support wherever possible to see the project completed, and we welcome further dialogue with all appropriate stakeholders." So the question is, can Torkel Larsen and the Widnesea Pier and Promenade Association keep going?
There have been times when we've had some big setbacks and we've been pretty close to giving up. But every time we've managed to find a way forward. We've worked too hard and too long to give up now, but we're still hopeful that we will be able to get it built this year.
And despite this latest setback, the people of Widnesea will also keep on fighting to turn their Yorkshire seaside town back into a resort worth visiting.
Yeah, the buzz is there, the energy's there, and we just want to get stuck in.
I just wonder, you know, can you turn the clock back and recreate something that's gone? It could take a few years to get the funding then for the next stages, but if they did disband, who is actually going to be responsible for the upkeep and maintenance of the structure that's going to be left behind?
It'll be nice, I reckon. Yeah, it's a good idea. It'll bring a lot more people around. I think it deserves that pier.
With a town like Widnesea, it's really driven by faith and hope that there's always something good around the corner. They would just keep pushing for the thing that will save them.